Before Fraser starts his talk, I'd like to make a quick announcement if I can. I know that some of you here will know about this already because you're already Flora donors, and I've sent you an email recently. And those of you who are members of the Fairfield Association and are not donors will be getting a message about this sometime soon. Because the Fairfield Association now has responsibility for such a lot of land and such a lot of different things, so besides the flora and fauna nature reserve and the orchard and Fairfield Green play area, we also now look after the triangle on Orchard Road, and if you add that all up, it's in excess of 50 acres that we're trying to manage. We do pretty well, by and large, raising money by applying for grants, for capital funding. It's much more difficult to get hold of money for maintaining what we do. And so we've decided to set up a Fairfield Friends scheme. So some of you will have been getting emails about this already. I put a number of these leaflets on the table. If any of you are not in either the donor or the Fairfield Association member category and you want to pick up a form at the end and think about contributing on an annual basis, a small amount, say £25 a year, whatever you think you can afford, that would be really helpful. We think that we're going to need something like £5,000 to £10,000 a year to maintain all that we do. We've just spent more than £20,000 repairing the safety surface under the play area, for example. And farming is going to be expensive. It's going to cost a lot of money to do the ploughing and the sowing and all of the rest of it. So we're going to have to work quite hard to keep our heads above water. So if anybody is interested in contributing a relatively small amount on a regular basis, we would be very interested in hearing from you. And it says on the form, we'll send you back to you.
Thank you, Mick. Okay.
Welcome, everybody. I just wanted to mention the fire exits, which is basically for the fire to go out the way you've come in, but if that proves difficult, then that's also a fire exit. This session is recorded, and like all of the others, will go on the Fairfield website, so it's a really good opportunity to ask lots of intelligent questions this evening, but also I would really like to welcome Fraser. I think most people have walked around Fauna and have stood and admired the beautiful white park cattle in the reserve, but I suspect, like me, that a lot of people know very little about them. I have to say that Fraser let on this evening that he's here instead of feeding them.
I will be feeding them directly after this.
Yes, hence the suit.
Yes.
But that's all from me, so I'm going to hand over to Fraser.
Thank you, Sue, for that introduction. Yes, some of you may or may not recognise me in this suit. I have to wear this at least once a week when I go to the office in Wales. And yes, I will be getting changed and making sure that the cows are properly fed, hopefully on 8:30, as long as the questions aren't too lengthy and I know all the answers. I've also been asked by the Rare Breed Survival Trust if I could just put a little bit in this evening for them. It's their anniversary year, they've been going 40 years. So it will be a little bit about White Park cattle and about the Rare Breed Survival Trust, hence the reason you've had the handout. They're not asking for money, they're just asking for me to make you aware of what they do and what they don't do. First off, the music. Anybody recognise this chap? Excellent, because that's the answer I have. Yes. This gentleman, 40 years ago, with some of his farming friends and some of the landowners he knew, started the RBST, and of course, you all know his son. Or you should know his son, you should be watching that every Sunday while the nights are dark. I assume you do. He does have, and you may have seen them occasionally, White Park on his farm. They are English Longhorns. Again, a beautiful animal, but we can only have so many animals with horns on the field. It's quite a dangerous prospect when you're feeding those cattle. Registered charity, RBST, as I said, it's in its 40th year. The patron, quite obviously to me, is HRH Prince of Wales. He does a lot for the Rare Breed Society. Dedicated to the protection and conservation of Britain's farm livestock heritage. Does a lot of work protecting not only cattle, but pigs, sheep, equine. Since its formation in 40 years ago, I'll tie in with that, it's halted the extinction of any native breeds in the UK. Now, we all know about extinction and we all know about the dodo, but I was quite sad to realise that quite a lot of British animals have become extinct over the last century. It's quite amazing what you're seeing. There is a slide letting you know about one or two of them this evening. National headquarters for the RBST, is at Stoneleigh Park, where the national show was. I don't know whether you've ever been down there. It's stopped now. It was a marvellous show. Again, something that was underfunded. I think the next best show now to see rare breed animals would be the Yorkshire show. If you ever get a chance to go over there, it's quite a big, it's on for 3 days. Obviously, like fauna, it relies on membership, legacies and donations. I don't want you to sign the back of that form that I've given you out today. I would like you to donate to fauna, obviously, as Mick quite rightly pointed out beforehand. Excuse us. This is the thing on extinction. Like I said, between 1923 and 1970, 26 British farm breeds became extinct. Now, if you put that into context, that's one breed every 2 years that we will never, ever see in this country ever again. That shouldn't be happening, really. And obviously the RBST do marvellous work to stop that. These are some of the animals and the cattle and the sheep and the pigs and the horses that you'll never see. Where have they gone? My mistake, sorry. There. And I know you probably can't see it at the back. I'm not saying that you haven't got very good eyesight, but it's in red. But my favourite sounding one up there was the Lincolnshire Curly Coat Pig. Quite disappointed that I'll never ever see that. Sounds like a wonderful animal. And of course, Caithness and the Irish Dun, which were great big plough stock animals. Something that Mick may be looking for ploughing his fields. May donate the White Park for that for you, Mick. Don't know. This, as I said, RBST have now halted. There are no more breeds going to be extinct, thanks to their work. There are animals very close to it, extremely close to it. But why did the RBST find their animals? Well, conservation of the UK and the native farm. They also conserve and look after genetic resources, so that's bull semen, that's eggs, and all the things that we need and we use to make sure that we have rare breeds. Status of the cattle breeds before the RBST came into force was, and this is why I've given you the handout, because on the handout you'll see the red, the orange, the yellow, the green, the blue, which lets you know which is critical, endangered, vulnerable, minority.
I think it'd be helpful to have the lights down a bit. Yeah.
Would it?
Just a bit.
Sorry about that.
Now, I'm not sure I've got the right one.
Two on the right.
Uh-huh. Ooh. There you go. No, it's all right. No, I look better in the dark. Thank you. You can see that better. Good. So the ones in the red in 1973 were obviously critical. And there, as you can quite clearly see, is our White Park. That, thank goodness, is no longer critical. Now, critical, according to the RBST, was less than 150 breeding females. So there were a few bulls as well on top of that, but not many. Not many. So they've done quite a good job, and obviously farmers have done quite a good job to get these animals back into the general public domain, and also to keep them alive, to stop them going extinct. Now, you won't be able to see this, so I will read it for you, if I can. I'll stand over here with the microphone. Nothing like being stuck in the corner, is there, really? Right. It's about the Park Cattle Registration Programme. So the Park Cattle Registration Programme in Britain was started in 1918, just after, in between the war. Registrations lapsed during 1946. Why, I don't know, but something was going on, I think. By then, only the Deniver, Woburn, Whipsnade and Cadso herds survived as domesticated herds. Woburn and Whipsnade, you probably know where they are. Deniver, as its name suggests, is in Wales, and Cadso is in Scotland. They were the only domesticated herds. The ancient herds of Fainall, not Vainall, it's Fainall, in Wales, and the Chillingham herd had become semi-feral, like a few of the children that we know around here. 1973, Rare Breed Survival Trust was formed in Britain by Adam's father, as I've said, and the following year the registration programme was revived for the remaining British herds in the White Bark Herd Book. Numbers have increased now to exceed 1,000 British breeding cows in the UK, of which we have 14. Well, actually, not really 14, it's only 11. If you remember, we did have a imposter bull in there not one season ago, and three of them aren't quite purebred. On your watch list, this is the 2012 one. You have the 2013 one in the handout that I gave you. And on the back of that, you can now see that the White Park is in a minority, not in critical. So it's gone from being critical, stage one, less than 150, to a minority, which is over 1,000 breeding cows. And that's a tremendous effort, really, considering the supposed dangers the animals pose with the horns. But they're not a commercial breed, and we all know when we go to the supermarket, the supermarkets, of course, they want British reared animals, but they want commercial animals because they give them the better yield and it costs them less to feed, look after, etc., etc., and we don't want to pay too much for our fresh meat. Although Mick very generously bought some three Christmases ago. One went to slaughter. Mick said it was very nice. Sure it was. Sorry, am I going? Now then, how do we protect these national treasures? I'll carry this again and I'll try and read up here. Obviously, looking after these animals is paramount. What happened in 1940 was one or two pairs of the White Park cattle from the Cadso herd were exported to Canada. This was to preserve a British national treasure from the threat of Nazi invasion. We obviously thought we were going to lose at that point. So what they did is they shipped a few out from the Welsh herd, sent them across, not directly to America, they sent them to the Toronto Zoo. They were kept there, and the Canadian offspring of those cattle were then transferred to the Bronx Zoo. I think the horns are probably coming quite handy down there, maybe. Well, as it says, the facilities there were inadequate for their long-term housing, and they were moved to the King Ranch in Texas. Sounds quite grand, doesn't it? They obviously had a lot of space. And I don't know whether there was a king in charge there. There they remained for 40 years before they were purchased by Mr. and Mrs. John Moakley of Polk City, Iowa. And what's happened since is one or two very small herds have sprung up all across America. One or two herds have sprung up in Germany as well. The Germans came over to our farm last year, wasn't it, to have a look at the cattle, with the thought of buying some bulls and some cows. We didn't have enough for them to look at and weren't really prepared to offer it to them at the price they were offering to us. We're still tight with the money. So another thing on rare breeds, contrary to going, and before we bought White Park at the farm, we were looking at all sorts of beautiful animals. This, I'm sure you'll agree, is a magnificent animal, the Highland cattle. But it wasn't on the rare breed. list. I always thought it was, so that was quite a shock to me to notice that it wasn't on there, because there's over 1,500 breeding females. And maybe looking back now, I don't know, maybe they wouldn't have quite fit in. I think they're more used to seeing them in the Highland areas, and of course they're not English. For those who can remember back to the beginning of when we had them, we had a Belted Galloway in amongst the White Parks. That came as part of the deal with one. It was a White Park cross with a Belted Galloway. Fantastic animal, quite a bit bigger than the White Park, wasn't it, Mum? They were, as you can see, a vulnerable minority. They're now back up to native. So again, the thought process was, well, it's not a rare breed. It's not really commercial. It's a bit too commercial for us. We'll not bother processing with that breed of cattle, the Belted Galloway. But again, a beautiful animal. But now, thanks to farmers and people who have a little bit of land about them, over 1,500 breeding females. So again, very good work by the RBS too. When people think of White Park, I'm usually told that they think of this wild looking thing. This is the Chillingham wild cattle. I think it looks like it was born in the time that land forgot. That it is a white park, although they are quite speckled and not as defined as our white park, with the tips and the horns and the hooves. But this is still on the critical list, so much so that the RBST has taken 10 cows, 2 bulls and some calves to a secret location in Scotland, which I'm not supposed to tell you where that is. But if you've been listening about the herd that was taken to America from Scotland, you'll know exactly where it is. So it doesn't take a lot of working out. But again, these are the feral ones. They're not managed in any way, shape or form. They're looked over, and of course they're looked after, but they're not fed concentrates, they're not fed silage or anything like that. They're just left to fend for themselves in a huge park over in Northumberland. You can go around the park as well. I haven't been, but it's meant to be quite a nice day out, and it's a lovely part of the country, is Northumberland. On the other side of the country, you have the Fainall cattle. Again, White Park. This is in Temple Newsham in Wales. And yes, for those observant ones of you, that there are some black ones there. If the animal is fully black, it is accepted into the White Park breed. It cannot be black with white hooves, white tips, so like an opposite or a negative of the White Park. But if it's fully black, like so, that can also be accepted into the White Park breed. That is Fainall, not Vainall, I'm in total point. Good, thank you. Why do people not use rare breeds? Well, obviously, they're a slower maturing animal, which doesn't return you a great deal of money, as I keep telling Mick. But they do have a high taste meat content, as Mick keeps telling me. The reason people want them, of course, is because they're produced and finished within a natural environment, generally. Not always, but that's where they generally are. And apparently they're increasingly used by top chefs. Now, I sell meat for a living, as most of you know, and I very rarely get asked for White Park, actually, but or any rare breeds. And top chefs at the moment want things extremely competitively priced. Rare breeds aren't. So obviously the difficulties of these are in production and marketing, the production being because no farmer really wants to be walking around a field or a stable or something like that with horns with an animal like that. Of course, these are one or two other little things that you can have in. Now, some of you may recognise that. That happens to be Jake, our first bull. I don't know whether you can all cast your mind back there. The reason we called, or reason my daughter's called the bull Jake, was because the idea was at the beginning that all bull calves would be killed to make steaks. So they came up with the name Jake the Steak. That was him. He managed to get 3 good years life out, and quite some good fun times as well while he was at it. That now is in the Fauna Field, Mick, yeah? This side where that fence isn't. As opposed to that, the field behind it is the car house meadow where he grazed. Good looking boy, wasn't he? The quote below, some of you may or may not know him, A.A. Gill, the food critic in the Sunday Times. I don't particularly think he's any good, I think he talks about himself too much. People have said that about me as well. The White Park beef was really excellent, softly chewy with that strong, distinctive, almost corrupt flavour of proper beef. It was the best steak I've had this year. That was back in 2012. Seems to me that he's got out a bit more recently and had other steaks. But it never took off, even after that. And that was only a small caption of the write-up. Probably because White Park wasn't mentioned, but he did allow people to use that quote. And the restaurant is still going well and still using White Park, down in London it is. A more reliable source, or not so much a reliable source, but a source that I would look to if I was telling anybody, was King James I. Now, White Park's reputation was first established in August 1617, and I'm going to say its reputation for good eating meat. After a day's hunt in the medieval Castlehorn Tower near Preston, it's actually nearer Chorley than Preston really, King James I sat down to his dinner. His dinner that evening was a strip loin of beef shared amongst him and his companions. And his quote was, "Finer beef nay man ever put his teeth into, henceforth it shall be sirloin." And that's where your sirloin steak comes from. I'm sure that went with the wine as well. Obviously, it wasn't generally 19 dead pieces of meat. But it's a nice little thing. There is also a restaurant near Horton Tower called The Sirloin, which is walking distance from Horton Tower, if you like to go out there and have a look. It's very nice. It's a very nice restaurant. Doesn't serve White Park beef, though, unfortunately. I've tried. Why do we have White Park on Fauna? Well, as you know, there's varying types of grass. There's some good grass, there's some very good grass that you're about to plough up, and there's some and there's some average grass that you're not going to plough up. The White Park are fantastic at turning all sorts of herbage into very good meat, very good beef. In good conditions, they generally put on about 1 kilo a day. This time of year, they're not putting a great deal of weight on. Like most of the women, they're all on diets, aren't they, in January? They will eat anything. And I don't know whether you might want to follow this up or not, Mick, but the Grazing Advice Partnership do recommend that White Park and that sort of animal are fantastic for keeping this, and there may be some money in it. I don't know. We shall see. And basically, folks, I will now take questions on our White Park, and hopefully you will not keep me too long from my girls who need feeding. Thank you very much. Yeah. Wow. Wow. Just a little thing that wasn't in there. excuse me. White Park were a multi-purpose breed. Probably about the 1700s, they were used for milk and beef. But primarily when they had them, they were used for oxen as well. They were used for the ploughing. They were quite big in the shoulder. And obviously with the horns, nothing ever slipped off. So, Ian, if you wish to try 2 out when you're ploughing that field over near Haverbreaks, you can have 2 of those bull calves and you can train them if you wish. Well, you can't have them, you can buy them. Anybody else? Has anybody got any questions apart from my family? You are not allowed to ask questions, Sue, sorry.
How do you sell the meat?
Well, that's a very good question.
It's a question I'm asking deliberately.
Right. What happened was, It was a very sad day. We took one to market. And can I suggest never ever name cattle? Right. I took it over to the other side of Clitheroe one stormy night like this. And it was a very, very sad day leaving that cow there, and that's what I'm going to call it from now on, that cow. And we said as a family, right, we'll break it down, we'll put it in the freezer and we'll eat it and this will be great. And we got tons of mince, four ribs of beef, one went to Mick, and lots of other steaks and bits and bats. And it took us so long to get through it, Sue, that we didn't do it again. We are thinking about it because the bull calves that we have may or may not go into market. Beef price has flattened off at the moment, and the market at this time of year isn't very good. You want to be in the pre-Christmas market, obviously. So yes, if you'd like to buy half a cow, Sue. I have six halves in the field. Yeah, I mean, listen, if enough people asked, then I'm sure we could do it. They would get killed up at Lancaster Auction Mart, just over the other side there, and they would get butchered by Westgate Frozen Foods, who are a very good company, all hand butchery. But there would be enough. There would need to be enough people for us to make it viable for you to have the meat. But if you wish and you ask, and obviously everybody's going to say, well, I'll have a fillet and I'll have a rib. Please remember there are rump steaks, sirloin steaks, ribeye steaks, and lots of mince. Lots of mince. Remember, summer's only around the corner, those burgers.
So what happens to the calves you're producing then if you personally are not sending them to slaughter?
Well, this year we've had five calves, two dead. And of course the two that died were heifers. So that caused us no end of anguish. Especially Helen feeding them night and day, and then waking up one morning and Henry came down and said, oh, I see your calf's dead. I said, thanks, Henry. I didn't know that, but thank you very much. Yeah. So we've got three bull calves and we don't know. That's the thing. We were going to put them into market. We've never been landed with three bull calves. And they're not white part purebred. They're with a limmy, the limousine, which was the big brown boy in the field last year. So there'll be good eating beef, and at the moment the roast veal until the 12 months, and then after 12 months they will be beef. But of course they're quite long maturing animals. Do you keep them, feed them, cost some money, and then at the end not sell them for beef, or do you sell them now as roast veal? People like the idea of roast veal, not many people are keen on the taste of veal. I think it's something Helen's going to sit down and tell me what to do by the end of the year, don't think. I don't have much of a choice in it.
And it's the reason why, a big reason why they're there, it's a sort of difficult carving that they're naturally diminishing. So they have to drop
in. Sorry, excuse me.
Kind of population, you almost get fed up. Because, night and day, having to be in the limit.
All right, it's enough about Helen. Sorry, Mick, Ian was first. Go on, Ian.
I'm surrounded by vegetarians. So I think we're going to have a slight change of theme.
Oliver, did you see that? How are you?
At least, is quite an old lady, I believe.
Cheers.
What's the natural lifespan, aside from butchers, of a cattle like these?
Yeah, not that bloody long. They usually stop breeding. This is white part we're talking about now. I don't know about other rare breeds, but this is white part. They usually stop breeding at 16. Usually start breeding at 13. So they're quite good, lengthy breeders. She stopped breeding at 19. She's now 19 years old. She's now 21. I didn't think she was going to be here this winter. She keeps defying me. Moving around and keeping going, and she sort of keeps the herd in check as well, which is quite good.
What's she called?
Long Face. So might not mind, but there again, I can't kill her. I can't put her into the food chain because she's too old. So we're just waiting, praying that she doesn't. Hopefully she'll go on in this. That's extremely old.
Yeah,
it's extremely old. Dairy cows usually last till about 12 years old. Beef cows, if they're not killed and they're left, you know, and like pets, if you will, like we have them. 15, 16. Yeah, she could be one of the oldest cows in England.
So is there some regulation that stops you actually killing them?
Since BSE, yes, since BSE, you can't put animals pre-96 into the food chain.
So
pre-96, you cannot put animals into the food chain because of BSE.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. Well. Can't waste it, Mick. That's can't waste it. Like I said, summer is around the corner. Sorry, Mick, you were going to, what were you going to say? Can you remember now?
Well, at first look, it strikes me that there probably are quite a lot of people who would like to eat very healthy meat. You know, I think you didn't have a kind of advantage there. You know, maybe we should be.
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
That could be about ways in which we could sort of help you.
Well, yeah, we can.
Yeah, I mean, the beef I had was terrific.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's never going to be a commercial enterprise, but I think it's a right thing.
It maybe is, but unfortunately, what has to happen, and I'll let you all know, obviously, once it's dead and killed, everybody has to take it. You don't have to take it all, but everybody has to come in then. It can't be like, I'll go next week, I'll go the week after. We will discuss it seriously, and we will let you know through form. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Why did you introduce the
Limousin
bill? Is there a shortage of good gene pool in white
mark? Yeah. Well, there is a shortage of gene pool. The straw, the semen, not necessarily expensive, but you have to get them at the right time, and it's quite a bit of management. The bull we had, the one we have now, was too young, and the one we had prior to that was brothers, uncles, dads of the others. So to stop making a herd of crazies, we brought the Limmy in because we needed to keep the calves going. He was the best one that we could pick. We were going to do it with an Aberdeen Angus, but he picked up lame 2 weeks beforehand. So that was the smallest animal. Obviously we needed a small animal as well because they're not big. Although they do say they're easy calving, we all experienced last year that the two of them weren't easy carving. So, yes, we landed on the Limousine because he was close, he was a friend, he was the right size, he was the right breed, he'd proven himself all over Lancashire. and beyond, apparently.
So you have a non-related white part bull?
So we have a non... I haven't got a picture of him, but yes, we have a non-related white part bull because we sold his mother last year. So he is now free to do his stuff, and he has been. And we will keep him for another 3 years. Or maybe longer, depending on what sort of females we get back. Because he can breed with everybody there now, but he can't breed with their daughters or their offspring, quite obviously. Sorry, right at the back, sorry.
I was going to ask the same question, but I can ask another one now.
In Stockport, yes. Yes, there are. There's quite a number of ones dotted about.
Where did you source yours from?
All over. We got them from... where's the spring water come from?
Buxton.
Thank you. We got them from Buxton. We got them from down south. We only initially got about four or five, didn't we? And then the rest have become the Lancaster herd, if you will, which is the prefix to it. A little story about one I got from, going back to chefs really, got from down south. I'd driven down with a friend's Land Rover and trailer, picked White Park cow up, came back, heading back, just coming through Oxford. And I realised, no, diesel, you know. Pulled into a big forecourt, filled up, went to pay. Sat there, there's a little Frenchman behind me chunning away about the English apples and blah, blah, blah. And I could hear him. I turned around and went, oof, that's Raymond Blanc. How are you? I said, very well. Why don't people do this with the English apples and the English pears and you've got so much produce and all this? I said, it's funny that. I said, I've got a cow in the car. He said, oh, yeah. And then he came over and he was really, really interested, really enthusiastic. And he gave me the email address and the telephone number of his buyer. for the restaurant, the Manoir, not the little tiny restaurants, but his original restaurant. And he said, you know, we buy rare breed, we buy this, we buy that, all sorts of different things. And I got a sheet, well, I say a sheet, I got a pamphlet sent through to me. It must have been that thick, of everything I had to do and not do, and where was it, and they wanted to know the far end of a cow before I could supply them. And it just put me off. But I did phone him and tell him, and he said, well, maybe we can make an exception. And his buyer said, no, we can't. So there's no point. No, he didn't. I'd have been quids in then. Yes, sir.
A number of restaurants in Lancaster, I'm thinking of the Meeting House restaurant, they really make a feature that they're sourcing food locally. Mm. And if it was actually reared locally, I mean, I thought that would be a good selling point.
It would be a fantastic selling point. Being in the meat trade, I'm a little bit cynical about that. They do source food locally because the butcher's local. The butchers, as I know, buy it from traders. Yes, if you wanted it really local, you'd buy ours. But there's only so many and so many things. They have to be commercially astute. But I'll mention that. You go in that restaurant, Mum, don't you?
Uh-huh.
Mention it. Yes, sir. You have been waiting a while, sorry.
If, in fact, the meat is so tasty and good,
mm-hmm.
why might the breed not become kind of semi-commercial in the way the Vostro spot pigs are now and are not sought after in restaurants?
Yeah, good question. And I think with some of these breeds, and again, I can only really talk for White Park, it's the horns. They do not want... your insurance goes through the roof if you've got cows with horns. And I think that is one of the reasons. They're slow maturing. Really, you can only... They're only really any good at 3+, unless you're using them for veal or roast veal.
3 years plus,
so 36 months. Mm-hmm. You want them... The factories want them killing before 36 months, otherwise they're into all sorts of problems and paperwork, etc., etc. And they are expensive. It's not cheap. Well, yeah. Gloucester Old Spot is a great breed and they've done wonderful things with it. And a lot of people have got behind it. Not a lot of people have got behind the White Park breed. Morrison's are doing a great job on promoting British breeds, British beef, sourcing it. They didn't do very well over Christmas with the numbers, but they're doing a fantastic job with the beef. And still they're struggling to find the numbers and also the customers to pay. I mean, you all know, you go out there and you buy an 8-ounce sirloin steak of just general British, and it's nearly £5. You get a rare breed one, that's going to be £6-7. Not to you people, though. Yeah.
If you took the horns off, it wouldn't be a White Park.
It would be a British White. That's the difference between White Park and British White, yeah.
I'm surprised that person, because having had them in my garden...
Uh-huh. Oh, they see. Thank you. They're well bred. And they are good girls. But they got into your garden. You know, they will get that you need a lot of stock fencing and that sort of thing to keep control of them. Yeah, they do. And also, they were Robin's then, by the way. They weren't mine. Subsequently, they were mine after that. I took over after they went into your garden. They've never been in since, have they? Yes, sorry.
I can't remember the proper term for what you just said.
Oh, no.
You said you normally would expect to have more females. What was the term for females then?
Heifer, yeah, heifers and bulls.
So, but if you had more females, you don't use them for milk, do you?
No. No, but they produce them, but then you can rotate your stock. So you can pick the better ones out, make the breed better, etc., etc. And that's what you try and do. But this year, we've got our lot and we're stuck with it. Yeah. And yes, the little brown one will be dying as well.
Not naming.
Just the little brown one. Yes, Mick, sorry.
I was just going to comment. I'm surprised you hadn't actually said it, but I mean, you need to sell on the three cars, either sell them on or slaughter them, because otherwise they're going to corrupt the herd.
and they're going to corrupt our bank balance and everything else. It's all commercials with them, as beautiful as they are, and you know, everybody loves seeing them about, and we love having them. And you know, Mum was obviously, the reason we did this was she was sick of looking out into the fields on nothing, just grass really. So we got the cows in, and then Fauna and Fog done a wonderful job in separating it up and making everybody be able to walk through it, so everybody now feels like they're part of their family as well. But of course, with dying cows and dying calves come very wealthy vets and very wealthy vets bills and that sort of thing, etc., etc. So there is a need to kill them. Whether people, enough people come to me and say, look, we want the beef, right, I can do that and we can make money out of that, not a problem. Or we put them into market, make quick money and pay the vets bills. Yeah, we got to sell them, and we've got to sell the beef, the bulls, sorry. Even if they weren't, even if they were pure White Park, we'd still need to sell the bulls because we can't have too many bulls about. That would be riotous. Yes.
Again, switching from vets, cow whisperers.
What? Cow whisperers. Cow whisperers. Well, I feel better. I'm not even going to say.
I happen to be around when the cow whisperer visited you last summer.
Right.
You were amazed then. Are you still amazed? Have you found anything more out?
The effects of arnica are wearing off now, I know. Arnica.
Tell the story, but I couldn't believe it.
No, and I couldn't believe it either, to be honest. And I can't believe that Robin agreed to it and Mum agreed to it either, because they're quite cynical like that. I'm free loving and I love all that sort of thing. We had, and again, hopefully some of you saw it, hopefully some of you did. We had a cow down in the middle of the field last year. She'd had a very, very bad calving. In fact, it was stillborn. We'd had to stretch it out. You all eaten, haven't you? We got the calf out. She wouldn't get up. They usually, after a bit of mollycoddling and looking after, get up within 2 days, 24 hours, 48 hours. She didn't. The weather was okay. Then it got bad, rough, and you'll have seen this big mound of straw in the middle of the field. Underneath that was the cow, and she was getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And we'd been to Jabba with penicillin and all sorts of things, twice a day, either end of the day. It was coming nightwear, and somebody walked past the cottage where we live and said, look, one of my friends is a healer, and one of them's a whisperer of animals. And I went, oh yeah, as you do. Right. You get all sorts walking past our cottage. So I said, right. She said, they'd love to have a go on your cow. I went, right, would they? So I phoned Mum Romino after I'd explained it to Helen, who went. They said, just, you know, go on, give it a go. So I said, yeah, okay, that's fine. I said, obviously, if you're practicing, it's free, isn't it? So they said, oh, yes, I think so. Yeah. Anyway, they came down. This chap came down and he did all this and walked around it and put the thing. And the lady sat down and she prayed and did other things and whatever. And she gave me some arnica and that sort of thing. And what they were telling me was, believe it or not, that she was upset. She'd lost a calf and she wasn't for getting up and she couldn't be bothered. And she just wanted loving. So I gave her a load of love. She got up and proceeded to chase me across the field. And and every time I go in that field now, she remembers me, because Robin was jabbing her at the back and I was holding her at the front, and she couldn't see Robin, she could see me. So she thinks I'm the one that jabbed her, and she really doesn't like me at the moment. So there you go. Next year it's Robin at the front and me at the back. I'm going to do it that way around. Yes, look.
What Fraser's forgotten to mention is the fact that Helen and I spent about 3 days massaging that cow and turning it over, and then the cow whisperer came in, did a few prayers,
I forget about those massages. Yes, look.
Basically, that was a life in the year of a dairy farmer and his cattle. What you're talking now, it sounds like it'd be fantastic material for another documentary film.
Well, we'll see how the recording goes, shall we? Yeah, excellent. If they'd like to come out with me tonight when it's raining and hailstoning and feed the cows and you're up to your ankles in mud, I'd take them out all day. But they only seem to turn up in summer when it's gorgeous. And everybody's got the tops off and it looks fantastic. But yeah.
Who's going to play the other band?
I think I could take lead role in that.
Do you supplementary feed, they don't just feed on grass then?
No, so we have, and we're very fortunate this year, thank you very much. If you're in fauna, when you walk through from Cromwell round to the cottage, on your right hand side and your left hand side, there's two hay fields. Year before last, the hay wasn't particularly plentiful. This year, and it also cost. Thank you, Oliver, for that. I'm glad he's left. This year, hay was plentiful and it was free. Thank you, Mick. And I've been feeding them since the beginning of January. They'll be fed till the end of February, assuming we have enough, which I most certainly think we will. And it's fantastic. It's really good hay out there. It's like hay used to be. If you remember it in the old square bales, nice and green and a nice good smell to it, it's really good because the fields don't get sprayed or slurried or anything like that. So, you know, it's a great job. They have got cow manure on it, but not much. So they're enjoying that at the moment. Speaking of which,
sorry. You might be interested to know that the arrangement that we have with Fraser Cattle is that it's a no-cost agreement. So they keep the grass in our fields down for us, and we don't pay them for that. And they get their cattle fed, and we don't charge them for that. So it's a
Well, they used to when Oliver was chairman.
What happened not last summer but summer before was that it was the very first time we produced some hay. It was halfway in between.
It was, yeah.
And it wasn't a very good summer, and so the crop wasn't very good, but we were pretty short of money at the time, and so we charged for it for it.
A very good rate. But you still charged on it.
But now, one of the useful things for us about the Natural England Agreement that we have, that we've just signed, which actually backdates itself to the beginning of April last year,
yeah,
is that we now get some money for the next 8 years every year because we have the White Park cattle on the site. And what we do is give that financial support back to Fraser in the form of things that he needs. So,
like Ian occasionally.
Yes, we do our own volunteer work, but we. So this year we gave him the hay, and we've of course given him a couple of extra fields.
Yes. And they really did appreciate that.
Well, this year they've also had the field, the big field that we're going to turn into arable. And the reason that they like that grass so much is because it's been very heavily fertilised by the sheep farmer who had it before.
Mm.
And so it just tastes better than the other grass. So they rush across fauna and flora to get into those fields. But for the next few years, we have a good arrangement whereby we can support Fraser and the White Park. The difficulty is going to come when that agreement runs out in 8 years' time, and we have to work out how we're going to carry on from there.
There'll be more mints available that year.
And if I could just follow up on that, those of you who came for Bill Grayson to conservation grazing last term, I mean, this follows on quite nicely because the way Bill Grayson operates is that he is a commercial farmer selling beef,
that's
like
right.
Fraser is. Mm. But he's also using his cattle for grazing on meadows for a conservation purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that these rare breed cattle are being used for this dual purpose, really, for organisations like us who want to maintain the hay meadows as well as for a commercial beef, as well as for beef production.
Yeah. Yeah, and hopefully that'll turn into quite a very good and lengthy partnership. Yeah, they do all that on the hay meadow. There's obviously certain areas within fauna that at certain times of year they're not allowed in, of course. So when the hay time is finished, I think it's about, is it 3 weeks, Ian, Mick? Something like that, and you go and you spread the wild flower seeds and... You've spread some seeds in the hay...
I spread 4 kilograms of seed last after hay making.
That's right.
That's when we
Yeah. And then obviously the cows go back in and they trample in. So they're quite useful for that sort of thing, aren't they?
Somewhere it will be a picture in those two payments.
So that'll be a one-off with it, the 4 kilos.
Sorry?
That'll just be a one-off the 4 kilos and that should...
Depends on how well they grow.
We did it for 3 years running now, right?
Yeah, it's every year.
It's been pretty specific beforehand. It's yellow rattle has been the main seed that we put in, which counteracts these the hard growing ryegrass and gives wildflowers a chance. Now, last year we had a really good crop of yellow rattle, so I think the thinking was, well, we can go another step. So there are 20 different varieties of wildflower in the 4 kilograms that I collected from the Cumberland Wildlife Trust. That's when
it looked like that old flake advert next year, won't it?
So will the seeds be collected from those flowers on the site?
I don't think we've quite got as far as
that. I think Ian's got enough work on his hands to be collecting seeds and things like that.
You know?
We have ourselves collected local seeds and spread them on the meadow field ourselves.
Yeah.
We did that in the first couple of years. Sheila Beveren did it. She's just come back to Lancaster.
Excellent.
But if we go back to what Sue was saying about conservation grazing, I mean, one of the interesting things that the white part do, if we get it into the right conditions with them so that it's not too old, is that they eat the rushes in those marshy areas. That helps to keep them down, and that means that then the rushes become more attractive to some of the wetland and wading birds, because they don't like the rushes to be too high because they're hiding in there. So at the moment there's something like 100 snipe in that big rushy area just opposite
where the alder is.
They like to be able to kind of stand up and look out from over the top, but if it's too high then they can't see. So the cattle are playing, you know, a good role.
Like I said at the beginning, they will eat all sorts of herbage. They're very good at turning it into good beef. Anything else? No, I can hear the girls calling for their tea. So.
If there are no more questions, then I'd like to thank Fraser very much.
It pleasure. Was
really interesting.
Good, I'm glad you like
that. Whatever. So thank you very much, Fraser. Could we just...
Thank you very much. Will you mention that the link is going to be on the Fauna website?
Yes, there's a couple of things really. This talk will be on the Fauna website and all of Fraser's slides will be there. And we also have just set up a lecture series blog. So if anyone would like to come here, you can get us on the Fauna website quickly, could you? While I'm talking about it. If anyone would like to make a comment about this talk, or any of the previous ones for that matter, then our wonderful web manager has actually set up a blog specifically for the lecture series. And if we can do it very quickly, you go into Fairfield. Is everyone used to blogging? Not everyone is used to blogging. Well, it is that different. Even I've learned how to do a blog. But it's quite a good way for us to actually communicate with one another.